Hi, my name is Christoph. Christoph L. from Pennsylvania. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And I'm going to start this by just giving a little bit of a qualification here. I am 32 years old, 31 years old today. And well, not today, but I am 31 years old. I've been in OA for about 2 years now. And I have started OA when I was well over 300 pounds at 6'6". I am now just over 200 pounds. So I have a 100-pound weight loss that I maintain, and I'm still working on the right weight there. So, that's just the numbers out of the way. The spiritual and the other qualifications we'll get to during the course of the whole presentation here. I want to start with a little bit of a food history and give a little bit of an idea of how the disease looks for me when it is active. So there's a couple things that I've repeatedly done. So one thing one of my trigger foods, I have eaten that. I'm sorry, I do apologize. I hope I'm back. So I started my journey. I'm just going to start chronologically because I'm having a little bit of a hard time here, trying to get in the mindset of giving a presentation. But so I started as a child. My first memory that I had really was eating and eating and eating a lot of different items and a lot of different weird combinations. You have, your bread with cheese and Nutella all at the same time, all these kinds of things, So there was certainly memories there of really having these eating behaviors already, like in my single digit years. So, fast forward, you go to, the teenage years and this is all kind of behavior where it has to come out of, the family depository of foods, so it's all there. The food is all there, and I kind of have to get what I can, hopefully without other people noticing, because it's already obviously starting. It's a behavior that's not very well received. If you eat everything of something that is there, that's not good. So I really quickly started to learn that that's not good behavior, and that's a problem. So I'm then I'm starting to go out on my own. I started my apprenticeship to become an electrician. This is all back in Germany, by the way. I'm from Germany. So I started my apprenticeship as an electrician when I was 16, and I have my real first own income, albeit very low, but it was my first income. So I started immediately spending a lot of that on food, obviously, and I always went out with the people that could actually afford it to go out for breakfast and for lunch during work hours, and would buy a lot of food that they would serve at the places that they would just go to during break time. So those kinds of things. And later, when I actually came to the States in 2015, I had started to work on the shipyard in Philadelphia, which was pretty hard work, and the people around me were not really accommodating. It was a lot of there was a lot of bullying, harassment of all kinds of natures, and it was a pretty tough time for me. And this is where it really took off. I was overweight before then, and I did have all these problems before then, but it really took off then, where it was getting really, 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 really intense, my disease, I want to say. I was working from 6 in the morning till 2:45 or something like that. So then when the drive home from the shipyard to my apartment was only like 5 minutes, but I would still sit in the car and order the pizza when I was still in the car in the parking lot of my work, so that when I got there 15 minutes later, it wouldn't take so long for them to show up with the pizza when I had already, so I had already ordered it, so that would cut the time until they actually got there. That was how urgent it was for me to eat. And I would have the 14 or 16 inch pizza every day, 2 liter soda, and the dessert that they would bring. And I would just sit in front of the TV and just try to, what I know today is just try to numb the pain, that it was, and fill a void that I never knew what it was. So this is like, there's one more story I want to give as far as the food goes, and why it was an insane thing to do these things that I did. Then I want to move on from that, because there's just a lot more I could spend the hour easily talking about things I did with or around foods, obviously. So one more thing was, I was traveling a year or two later in a white van, no markings. It was my own van. I was actually living out of that van to save money on hotels when I was traveling for work. And I would, every day during lunch, I would pull up to a pizza place, and I did that for probably 6 weeks every day. And I would buy the same thing, and I would go in the back of my van, and I would just eat the pizza and look at something on my phone and watch a video and just zone out, and the world would be okay for 15 minutes, So I did that for a long time. I did that for a while, a couple of weeks probably. And then one time I was in there in that place, the one person actually asked me, and this is in all seriousness, they were not making the joke. I don't think they did. The one person said, there's a person working here, and they were wondering if you're working for the feds or what is going on. They couldn't explain why there was a white van pulling up every day to their store, and someone would buy something and then disappear in the van, because I wasn't sitting in the front seat either, so I was sitting in the back, so they didn't know what was going on. So the one guy was under the impression apparently that he was being surveilled or something, that obviously was. It was kind of funny, but it was embarrassing at the same time. So that's when I started rotating the pizza places, and I would go to the next one, and then I went there for a couple of days, and then the person said, "Oh, you must really like that pizza." I'm like, "Yeah, it's not about really liking it. It's just I need this. I need this." So, this is just a brief overview of the food. So, the other behaviors and the other things that come out of this was, I was cheating on people, in relationships. I was stealing things, starting, when I was in my teenage years. I got caught shoplifting and all those kinds of things. I was stealing from the companies I worked for. I was coming up with schemes. One time I was dialing in back in Germany. I was dialing back the odometer of a company car, so they would charge me for the private miles I drove. It was crazy. Like, there was a lot going on that I did that was really not questionable, but downright, criminal. And just because I was really spiritually ill, I was not well. I was not okay. I was lying to people constantly, and I'm still today working on that. I'm just realizing today dishonesties to myself, to others that I'm expressing, and I get to work on these today still. So that's a big component that I just wanted to briefly mention here too, of my disease personally. So when I was in the beginning of my 20s, I realized that there was something quite different around me, and this is getting into the neurodiversity part here now. I was realizing that there was something fundamentally different about me, and I, at the time, called it wrong. I still call it wrong sometimes. I do understand that there's a stigma behind that, and I'm, to me, it's just, if something's doesn't feel right, and it doesn't really. It makes me ill, and it makes me upset. It's wrong to me, so I call that wrong for myself. So I was thinking to myself, something's not quite right. I couldn't do a wash and get the wash out of it and hang it up, because I would just leave it in there. I wouldn't be able to remember anything. And so, I came up with, through a lot of research in school, they tried to tell me, what it was. Some person thought it was a It's the numbers equivalent of dyslexia. He said, "You maybe you have that because I couldn't keep up in math in engineering school that I tried to do, which I obviously didn't finish. And there was a million other schools and things that I didn't finish and I started." Through that, I went to some specialists to look at that, and they said, "No, I think you have ADHD." So I went to the doctor, and I squeezed an ADHD diagnosis out of them. Which later coming to the States, I tried to get that diagnosis again because the German one wasn't going to be any good around here, obviously, because they, couldn't even read what it was. Or so I went to the psychologist again. They said, they started giving me pills for it, but they also ran tests at the same time. And then this lady said, "It's not ADHD. I want to send you to a neuropsychologist. I don't think that's what it is. It's not ADHD." And I thought she was crazy. I thought, "You don't know what you're talking about. I know I have ADHD." And that was a selfishness thing for me to even say that and to doubt what they were trying to do, because the real gift that comes out of that, when I went to the neuropsychologist, they said, they did a test. It only took them one day and pretty much came back with autism and Asperger's. She said there was a number, there was some number it was something between, I think if it's over 16, someone would be considered to be on the spectrum, and mine was 49 or something. She said it was the highest number she had ever seen, and she's been doing it for a while. It's just that one test, but it's like very clearly to her I was on the autistic spectrum and Asperger's and a generalized anxiety disorder, I think they called it also. They gave me on the diagnosis. She said, there's a lot, and that's when I got to work on a lot of the trauma that comes out of that, is to realize that I was never good enough, why I was never good enough. I was just never right for the things that were expected of me. I would never fit into a lot of the molds. I would never fulfill a lot of the expectations, and I would never, well, I'm saying never, but a lot of times I wouldn't fulfill a lot of these expectations that society had or anyone really had, towards me. And I think she put it right when the neuropsychologist lady said, statistically, a lot of the things that you touch, they fail. And that is a very on the point, nutshell of why life can be very hurtful on the spectrum, especially if you grow up almost 30 years not knowing, and people just beating down on you and saying, "This is not right. What you're doing is wrong. You're not doing the right thing. You're not doing enough of this. You're doing too much of that." And it was never quite right. There was always something wrong. It was always the kind of the odd person. So, that's kind of a big trauma that I got to start working on and still working on today. And it is really an opportunity for me to find my place in the world today, to know, this diagnosis and to know what is going on. And it is very healing, and I want to talk about briefly also, because I have done that. I just gave a history of the food and the autism situation there, but what happened with the food? I was sitting in a psychologist's office, and she asked me after a little bit of talking therapy, I want to call it, we were just talking, and she said, what's bothering you in life today? And I said, everything's pretty good except I can't get my weight under control, which couldn't have been further from the truth. I was pretty miserable with a lot of things, and I was really not having a good time in life. And she said, there's something like OA, you can go and maybe they got something for you. And that was a Monday evening. And on Tuesday evening, I went to my first OA meeting. That was April of 2018, I think, or 19. It must have been, I keep getting it wrong, but I was thoroughly ready. I had the gift of desperation. I had no other answer. I hadn't even tried for a long, long time to find another answer to my obesity, to my discomfort, to my just spiritual unwell being. And I was thoroughly ready to just listen to what these people had to say. I sat down, I listened to the hour of the meeting, and I was just really finding that these people had something going on there. And I just stuck around, and I 2 weeks later, I got a sponsor. I started following a food plan. I've been, 2 weeks later, I had some problems with abstinence. I had reset my abstinence twice for, you would want to call it technicalities, but it's not the binging. It's the piece of bread that got me the first time after 2 weeks, and then after a year, I realized there was a dishonesty problem. I had claimed to measure out a teaspoonful of olive oil, and I just drizzled it on and thought that was good enough. And this might not sound like a big problem, but to me, it was a dishonesty issue, and I had to reset my abstinence. My first two sponsors both relapsed as I was working step four, and both times, I reset, and one sponsor went away out of the program when I was doing my step four. Then, when I reset and got another sponsor, I started working the steps with her. As I was working on step four again, she relapsed, and I found a sponsor the third time that truly had what I wanted, and I asked her if she would be my sponsor, and she took me through the big book, through the steps with the help of the big book only, and a certain meeting that is on always 7 a.m. the morning that I listen to and participate in as best I can. And it's been very good to me. It's been extremely uplifting, and it's been very, very helpful. I get to very on the point work on my issues that I have with food and with dishonesty, with fear, with resentment. I feel like a lot of the message to me personally was watered down before I got to that certain type of way of working the steps. And I feel like it slowed me down to, for the first year and a half of my program, to be told and to be allowed to eat things that have sugar in the first five ingredients, when I know today that sugar is an alcoholic ingredient to me. And that's really, I can't have sugar. Period. I cannot eat sugar. There is just no way around it. If I eat sugar, it's a bad situation. And I know today that I will not be having sugar, as I'm working this program, because it's not going to work. I had, unbeknownst to me, a couple of months ago, I had the slightest little sugar, and I was starting to really go for soy sauce. I was like, it was a whole situation. We had a big bottle that got transferred into a smaller bottle. The smaller bottle said no sugar in there. So I looked at it and I said, okay, there's no sugar in here. I periodically check my foods for sugar, and I said, there's no sugar in here. And it turns out that the bigger bottle was a different brand that had sugar and had 1 gram per half gallon. It was ridiculously low amount of sugar in there. And I had a measured out tablespoon of soy sauce on one meal, and still it would make me want more. It is that little. It is that little that it takes for me to get pulled in, get sucked in, and just drop it. And getting to where I want to drop everything and just keep eating and just go back. Because that's the allergy of the body that's there. It is real. Like that was the last thing for me to know. This is real. This is not just something people talk about. It's real. It's there. It's an allergy. The obsession of the mind kicks in right after that as I start to ingest that. So, that's really, I'm in a really good place today. I'm just getting better every day. The more I work this program, as I'm told, as the big book tells me, I'm a big book thumper today. I'm an available sponsor. Just a little plug here. If you want to call me, please do. I'm really looking for sponsors for a while now. It's been difficult. It's not been happening for me. So, I want to turn it back. I know this is not something I heard here in the meeting format, but one thing I want to share for people sharing after this is that, I would actually be uncomfortable with people directly talking to me after this and thanking me for this or any of that nature. So anything you can share, that'd be great. I'd love to hear from you people. So thank you so much for having me. I pass.